Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're embarking on a journey, really digging into the intricate world of data. Think of it like peeling back the layers. We want to reveal how information isn't just collected, but how it's, strategically connected.
Right, and how it's flexibly stored too.
Exactly. And then ultimately, how it's meaningfully presented back to us. We're navigating the whole life cycle, really.
From the hidden architectures, knitting it all together.
To the interfaces we actually use every day.
And that's precisely our mission for this deep dive. We really want to unravel the complexities. How do different pieces of data get brought together
Synthesized, yeah.
from all sorts of sources to make sense as a whole? And then we'll explore some powerful alternatives for storing and retrieving information.
Especially when the old ways can't quite keep up.
Exactly. With modern data demands, and maybe most critically, we'll shine a light on why making all that powerful data understandable.
And engaging.
And engaging, yes, for people like you is the ultimate goal. Because let's face it, brilliant insights don't help anyone if they're stuck in a black box.
Absolutely. So by the end of this deep dive, you'll gain a far deeper appreciation for SQL table joins.
Those workhorses.
Yeah, the workhorses of relational databases. You'll understand not just how they function, but when and why you'd use them effectively. We'll also dive into NoSQL databases as a really interesting alternative, looking at their strengths and where they fit.
And the strategy behind choosing them.
Right. And crucially, you'll grasp why UI/UX user interface and user experience isn't just, window dressing.
Not just making it look pretty.
It's the actual channel through which data becomes useful intelligence. This is your shortcut to being genuinely well-informed on these critical parts of data.
Let's do it.
Okay, let's unpack this. Segment one, the architects of data connection. So imagine, right, you've got information scattered everywhere.
Different lists, different tables.
Customer records here, sales data over there, maybe website click somewhere else. How do you bring it all together to answer a real question?
Like that.
Like, which specific marketing campaign actually led to our best customers buying our newest product? Something like that.
Okay, yeah. And that's exactly where SQL table joins come in. They are fundamentally the bridges connecting related data across different tables.
Using those P's you mentioned.
Right, using primary and foreign keys, those unique identifiers that define the relationships. But the key insight here isn't just what a key is.
Okay.
It's understanding that tables rarely live alone. They form this rich, interconnected web.
Ah.
And the art of SQL is choosing the right way to combine them, the right join, depending on the question you're trying to answer, seeing the whole picture.
And I find visual aids help a lot here, like Venn diagrams.
Yeah.
They really seem to clarify how these joins work, showing the overlaps and exclusions.
They absolutely do. They make the logic visible.
Yeah.
So let's start with the most common one, probably, the inner join. Think of this as your precision tool. An inner join only brings together information where there's an exact match
An exact map.
in the specific columns you tell it to look at across both tables you're joining. If a record in table A doesn't have a matching partner in table B
Yeah.
based on that column,
It just gets dropped.
it's simply excluded from the results,
Yeah.
filtered out, laser focused.
So if you need that surgical precision,
No.
only data where everything lines up perfectly, this is the one.
Precisely. Let's use that library campaign example. You have a patrons table, right? Patron ID, name, and a campaign checkouts table. Checkout ID, patron ID, book
I
title.
got it.
An inner join on patron ID would only show you patrons who actually checked out books for that campaign.
Ah, so it filters out patrons who signed up but maybe didn't check anything out.
Exactly. Or checkouts that weren't part of the campaign. The SQL query we had, select patrons, name, count, from patrons. Inner join campaign checkouts on patrons, patron campaign checkouts, patron group by patrons, name order by count, desk. That query first finds the matches, then it counts them up per patron and sorts them. So you quickly see the winner and how much they read. It's about analyzing confirmed interactions.
That makes total sense for that kind of targeted analysis. But, data isn't always about perfect matches on both sides.
True.
Sometimes you need a wider view. What if you want to see everyone in one group, even if they don't match something in the other?
Yeah, you've hit on a really key distinction, and that's where the outer join comes into play.
Okay, outer join.
So, unlike the inner join's strict matching, an outer join is built for comprehensiveness. It includes all the information from one table, or sometimes both.
Even if there isn't a match in the other one.
Exactly. Even if there's no direct match. And for those rows where there isn't a match, the columns from the other table will just show an NLL value.
Null, meaning empty or unknown.
Right. It signifies the absence of a match. So it's less about filtering out things and more about revealing the whole picture, maybe highlighting gaps.
So you might use this to find, say, which patrons didn't check out a campaign book.
Precisely. Or which campaign books weren't checked out at all. You'd start to see that from an outer join because those patrons or books would appear, but with NULL values in the columns from the other table.
Okay, I see. It gives you that complete list from one side.
It does. Sticking with the library, if you wanted to see all your patrons, period, and then for those who participated, show their checkouts. An outer join would do that.
And the ones who didn't participate would just have NULLs next to their names for the checkout info.
Exactly. Which immediately flags them. Maybe you want to send them a reminder email or something. It helps understand potential, not just what already happened.
And then you mentioned directions, left and right.
Yes. So there's left outer join and right outer join, often just called left join and right join.
What's the difference there?
It's all about which table you prioritize.
Mm.
A left join gathers all the results from the left table. That's the first table you list in your from clause in the query.
Okay, the first one mentioned.
Right. It takes all of those rows and then includes any matches it finds from the right table, the second one mentioned, if there's no match from the right table.
You get NLLs for those right table columns.
Correct. And a right join does the same thing, but flips the priority. It takes all results from the right table and brings in matches from the left.
So the order you write the tables in the SQL query actually matters quite a bit then. It's not just arbitrary.
Not at all. It's a command. It signals which data set is your primary focus, the one you want fully represented no matter what. It's subtle, but powerful.
Can you give an example of why you choose one over the other?
Sure. I remember working on customer onboarding analysis. We wanted to see every single new customer who signed up. That was our left table.
Okay, all new signups.
And then, if they had completed their profile setup, that data was in a second right table. We wanted to pull that profile data in.
So you used a left join.
We used a left join. That way, we saw every new customer, guaranteed. If they hadn't finished their profile yet, those profile columns were just NULL. We didn't lose sight of any new customer.
And a right join wouldn't have worked there.
Well, a right join would have given us all the completed profiles first and then shown which customer they belonged to. If a customer signed up but didn't complete a profile, they wouldn't have shown up at all in a right join focused on profiles. Different goals require different joins.
Okay, that really clarifies the strategic choice involved. SQL joins seem incredibly elegant for weaving together that structured relational data.
They are.
But as we know, the digital world isn't always neat rows and columns, is it?
No. Far from it sometimes.
What happens when your data is just messy or huge or unpredictable, needs to scale globally, like instantly?
Right.
That's where we need to look beyond the purely relational, I think. Here's where it gets really interesting. Are SQL databases the only game in town?
Not at all. And that's a perfect segue into NoSQL.
NoSQL. What does that actually stand for?
It generally stands for not only SQL.
Not only. Okay.
Yeah. And the key distinction, the fundamental thing to grasp, is that NoSQL databases are not relational. They don't enforce that strict table structure with predefined schemas in the same way.
So more flexible.
Much more flexible. Many argue they're more flexible and more scalable, especially for handling unstructured data, semi-structured data, stuff that just doesn't fit nicely into rows and columns.
Like what kind of stuff?
Think social media posts, which can have text, images, videos, varying fields, or sensor data from Internet of Things devices just pouring in constantly. Or maybe large binary objects like images or videos themselves. Trying to shoehorn that into a rigid SQL structure can be really inefficient or just impossible.
So NoSQL gives you options for that kind of data.
Exactly. It offers alternatives. There are different types of NoSQL databases too, each suited for different things.
Well,
you have document stores. Think MongoDB. They store data in document-like structures, often JSON or BSON. Great for things like product catalogs, where items have different attributes, or content management.
Okay, document stores.
Then there are key value stores, like Redis or Memcached. Super simple, super fast. You store a value associated with a unique key. Amazing for caching, session management, leaderboards.
Fast access is the key there.
Blazing fast, often in memory. Then graph databases, like Neo4j. These are designed specifically for data where the relationships are the most important part.
Like social networks.
Perfect example. Social networks, recommendation engines, fraud detection, anything where mapping connections is crucial.
Interesting.
And finally, wide column stores like Cassandra or HBase. These are built for absolutely massive scale, handling huge amounts of data distributed across many servers, often used for things like time series data, big data analytics backends.
Wow. Okay. So quite a variety under that NoSQL umbrella. It really drives home the not only SQL idea, there are different tools for different jobs.
Yeah.
That's the core message. It's not about SQL versus NoSQL as much as SQL and NoSQL. Choosing the right storage technology depends entirely on your specific use case, the type of data, the scale you need, the query
But
patterns.
doesn't that flexibility come with trade-offs? SQL is known for being really consistent, right? ACID compliance and all that.
That is an excellent and absolutely critical point. Yes, there are trade-offs, big ones sometimes. Many NoSQL databases prioritize other things over the immediate strict consistency that SQL databases guarantee through ACID properties.
Like, what do they prioritize instead?
Often they prioritize availability, meaning the database is always responsive, even if some servers fail, and partition tolerance, meaning it keeps working, even if the network connection between servers breaks down. This is often discussed in terms of the CEP theorem.
TK theorem, consistency, availability, partition tolerance. You can only pick two.
Generally, in a distributed system, you have to make trade-offs between those three. Many NoSQL systems choose availability and partition tolerance, AP, often sacrificing immediate consistency. They might offer what's called eventual consistency.
Eventual consistency,
Yeah.
meaning it'll catch up.
Yeah, exactly. The data across all the servers will become consistent eventually, but there might be a short window where different users could query the system and get slightly different, slightly stale data.
Which might be fine for some things,
Like seeing if a friend liked your photo a second ago? Not critical.
but maybe not fine for a bank balance.
Absolutely not fine for a bank balance.
Right.
So you gain huge flexibility and scalability, especially for non-relational data. But you might trade off that immediate guaranteed consistency or the powerful standardized querying language of SQL. It's a very deliberate strategic decision based on the application's needs.
That really makes sense. It's about understanding the characteristics of your data, what your application absolutely needs versus what's nice to have, and then picking the right tool. Okay, so we could have the most perfectly joined tables in SQL, or this super flexible, scalable NoSQL database holding petabytes of information. But imagine having all that brilliant data perfectly stored and organized, and nobody can use it. Nobody can understand
Yeah,
it.
what's the point then?
Right. What good is all that back-end work if it just sits there, like this unreadable treasure chest?
Exactly. And this brings us directly, inevitably, to the crucial role of UI/UX.
User interface and user experience.
Right. Think of it like this.
Yeah.
Your database, your backend systems, that's the engine, the chassis, the engineering marvel of a high-performance car.
Okay.
The UI user interface, that's the dashboard, the steering wheel, the pedals, the look and feel, the colors, the buttons, the
The
layout.
carts you actually touch and see.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the UX user experience, that's the overall feeling of driving it. Is it smooth, intuitive, frustrating? Can you find what you need easily? Does it make you feel confident or confused?
So UI is the UX is the how it feels.
Yeah. In simple terms, yeah. A beautiful UI, a stunning dashboard won't save a terrible, clunky user experience. They're both huge fields, entire careers, but they're fundamentally linked to how we actually consume and act on information.
So it's definitely not just about making things look nice. What's the real strategic payoff for investing in good UI UX, especially when we're dealing with complex data?
It really boils down to communication
Yeah.
and driving action.
Communication.
Yeah, it's about taking that raw data, those complex insights, and translating them into something people can actually grasp, trust, and use to make decisions. And here's the critical point. If people find your software difficult or unpleasant to use,
They just won't.
they won't, or
Correct.
they'll avoid it. And then it doesn't matter how good your data is, how vital your analysis, if it's trapped behind a bad interface, it's effectively lost.
That makes sense. And you mentioned trust.
Yes, it's a known human bias. People subconsciously judge the credibility of information based on how well it's presented. If a dashboard looks messy or a report is hard to
You
navigate,
might start doubting the data itself.
you might question the underlying accuracy, even if the data is perfect. Good UI/UX builds trust and confidence. It makes the data feel reliable, which is crucial for getting people to act on it. It's a direct investment in the impact of your data.
That's a really powerful point. Okay, so we've done the hard work. We've joined our SQL tables or set up our NoSQL store. How do we actually get this data out there in ways people can use and understand effectively?
Well, there are lots of ways, ranging from simple to very sophisticated. You can, of course, just generate reports. Like PostgreSQL can easily spit out a CSV file from a query result.
Sure, basic export.
Right. Or you might send query results directly to another programmed for processing, maybe through an API. But more visually, you have dashboards.
Like business dashboards.
Well, exactly. Visually interactive summaries. Users can often click around, filter data, drill down into details, see charts update in real time. Tools like Tableau, Power BI, Looker, they specialize in this.
Making data explorable.
Very much so. Then you have broader business intelligence BI tools. These platforms often go beyond just dashboards. They help create really in-depth analysis reports, maybe incorporating forecasts, advanced charts, letting users tweak parameters to explore scenarios.
More heavy-duty analysis.
Definitely. And maybe the most common way we interact with data presentation is through websites.
Oh, yeah. How so?
Think about searching an online store. You type in what you want, maybe apply some filters.
Price range, brand.
Right. Your search is basically a query hitting a massive inventory database on the back end. The website's UI then takes those database results and presents them to you instantly in a clean, usable format. Product images, prices, reviews. That whole experience is UI, UX wrapping around database interaction.
Ah, I never quite thought of it that way, but yeah, it's data presentation. It really brings it full circle, doesn't it? All that back-end stuff, the joins, the NoSQL choices. It ultimately serves that end user experience.
It has to. Otherwise, what's the point? It's about making the data's journey end not in a database, but in a human mind, ready for action.
So for listeners who found the SQL parts particularly interesting, where should they go next to keep learning?
Oh, definitely keep pushing those skills. W3 Schools is great for basics, but then maybe look at things like the 8-week SQL challenge, real case studies, or try advanced SQL puzzles online.
Practical application.
Exactly. HackerRank and LeetCode have good database problem sets too. And don't underestimate a good cheat sheet just for quick syntax reminders.
And for NoSQL or UI UX?
For NoSQL, check out the specific database vendors. MongoDB has MongoDB University. Redis has great docs. For UI UX, oh man, where to start? Maybe the Nielsen Norman Group for foundational usability research.
The experts.
Yeah. Or look into data visualization specifically.
Mm-hmm.
People like Edward Tufte or Cole Nussbaumer Nafflick. Her book, Storytelling with Data, is fantastic for learning how to make data clear and compelling.
Great recommendations, so many powerful tools and concepts, and we've really only scratched the surface, but exploring them unlocks so much understanding about our digital world.
It really does.
Okay, so we have covered a lot of ground today. We started by decoding those intricate SQL joins, connecting data points.
Mm-hmm. The relational.
Then we ventured into the flexible, scalable world of NoSQL alternatives.
For different kinds of data challenges.
And finally, we really underscored the absolutely essential role of UI UX in making all that data meaningful, accessible, and, you know, ultimately actionable.
Indeed. And as we wrap up, maybe just one final thought to leave you with.
Okay.
Considering how much data truly surrounds us now, every single day.
It's everywhere.
From our phones to how our societies are run, and it's increasingly shaping our world. What responsibilities do we have? As users, maybe as potential creators of these systems.
Your responsibilities for what?
To demand not just accurate data, but genuinely usable, understandable, and frankly, well-designed data experiences. How does our collective ability to understand and interact with data influence the kind of world we end up building?
Wow. That's a really profound question to chew on as we navigate this data-flooded landscape.
Something to think about.
Definitely. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the strategic world of databases and design. We hope you feel well-informed and maybe inspired to continue exploring this vast and fascinating world on your own.